We all tell ourselves stories of who we are and why. But we forget that we have the power to define them. That no idea grows from mewling striped cub to teeth at your throat tiger without a little help, some guidance, and a whole lot of love along the way. I'm Jared Cerf, and this is Here Be Tigers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Otter Worlds, brought to you by Masterpiece Theater.
I am Ram Nessus, a.k.a. David Herman of the Brothers Herman, and I am joined tonight by...
Hi all, I'm Jared Zerf, host of Here Be Tigers.
And I'm Anni or Blue Facilia online, and I'm just here for a good time.
And I'm just here. I exist in this world.
Exactly.
As some of you may recall from listening to the last couple episodes, we are launching into a playtest based off of some of our favorite tropes from retro video games, particularly JRPGs and some Western ones too. And we laid out in the initial conversation a few of our favorite things about those. For instance, I think, Anni, you had suggested or recommended we lean into the idea of maintaining a sense of innocence and hope.
Exactly.
Andrew suggested that magic remain in the liminal spaces, and I suggested also the small things, that it would also in small things remain, that anything legendary or incredible had to be made again. So, and I think before we dive into characters, which we were creating largely on the go there, Dave, it would be great if you could share with us a couple things. One was in terms of mechanics or structure to the pacing of the story. Mm. The other was more about tone. So one of each of you would.
Well, let's see. I think the general tone, like hopeful, but I like the whole idea of it being hopeful. I also like the idea of it being there being like mystery, like things don't quite add up. They don't fail to add up in a way that makes like that is truly unnerving. But it should always feel like there's more to know. There's deeper mysteries. The world is stranger than it appears.
Okay, Nomura.
I mean, this is like you and I both naturally put that a lot of that into worlds. So the challenge this time is going to be to do it without it being like the world teetering on the edge.
But how to not blow up the world by session three?
we have to do more like more Tom Bombadil and less the One Ring.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was leading a bit more into our initial play of kind of Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer.
Right.
Okay.
And I mean, I'm fine with like, there being little things in the village that don't add up, too. I mean, I think that should be a general theme that I think it should be along the lines of there's a lot about the world that mm-hmm. people take for granted.
Okay.
And don't see anything wrong with. And if you stop and think about it, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense. A lot of folklorish stuff.
Right. Things that seem normal to you now.
Mm-hmm. And that was the tone. What was the second question?
One was to tone, one was to mechanics.
Mm.
Or if not mechanics, then, for instance, Anni had suggested the idea of, since we're doing this collaboratively, rather than having a GM this time around, to make a pot of random encounters in some fashion that we can continue to add up into so that there's always that element of surprise and the unexpected, since we'll have largely forgotten what we put in there years ago. I think similar to in the Academy World games that you and I, we use the ritual card deck to degrade effect over time. So in that same sense.
I have one thought, but it seems a bit out of place for what I understand we're at right now.
Okay. It could be a thing we stumble into later.
Yeah. Well, it's just a way of a way of keeping it a little bit more lighthearted. And that is, if there are conflicts that are reaching a point we don't want to go, mm-hmm. like, and that could be as simple as a combat that's starting to hit to head towards total loss or things like that. But I know we're not at combat yet. It could also be like a social situation, like, oh, we've gotten ourselves into a mess. And like storyline wise, it seems like we're about to derail in a way that we're like that we're not necessarily wanting to. We can kind of resolve it or escape miraculously or things like that. But what then happens is like that there's a consequence down the road. And the idea that was occurring, though, that was popping to my head was in media res tokens, where sometime down the road, a plot just gets to start and we actually have like in full swing.
Okay.
Like we cut off the action before. Now at some other action is going to pick up just as spontaneously.
So this definitely sounds like at some point we want to integrate the world key system somehow from our Heart of Ashes. And that one, XP doesn't give you levels. It gives you things you can grow into or something they call world keys, which are a way to say, I like this thing or this relationship or that dynamic that occurred, and I'm going to spend some of my experience to make sure that goes into the foreground until I decide otherwise.
Yes, there is that. The other way of presenting this is we get attacked by like a bunch of dogs as we've raiding, I don't know, honey from old man Gribblekin's yard.
Pack of werewolves.
And we manage to escape, but the next, like a little while later, all of a sudden we cut to a scene where, yeah, we escaped that, but now we're in trouble with like the adults or something like that.
Okay.
It's not so much that we got a free out, it's that we changed the scope of the consequences.
Which is something I think we're going to discover as we continue to test this and figure out what system works best for the narrative we're trying to tell here or explore. Because there's, for instance, a huge divide between, say, Dungeon World of Heart of Ashes. Dungeon World has moves like Last Breath, where you die. Mm-hmm. Or maybe death makes a deal with you. And that creates a different tonality entirely than, say, Heart of Ashes, where it's about the things that happen to you that are, if not fatal, then consequential, and definitely fatal, perhaps, or consequential or impactful to others.
Maybe that's it right there. Consequence tokens. Consequence tokens build up for, would build up for, like, when you end a scene.
Mm-hmm.
In certain ways, they build up, and they're used later to start new plot threads.
So you're thinking perhaps something similar to Wonder Home, where certain actions, it was more dictated by the character, and there were some general ones too, could reward you with tokens that you could expend later to...
A mix between that and Fate's way of conceding a fight. Okay. So that you don't die, you get lesser consequences. The difference is that these consequences aren't immediate necessarily. They're not even necessarily associated with how we got them. They may be. It certainly makes a lot of narrative sense that they would be. Mm-hmm. But you could just as easily have the consequence of, you know, of the scene with the dogs in old man Gribblekin's yard be trouble we get into down the line that had nothing to do with it. Or it could.
To your point then, to kind of roll us into the playtest for this session two, what, Ani, during the chase scene, you attempted to convince others to aid you and failed miserably at that, instead were hit on by one of the local cool guys, right? In Dungeon World, when you roll a 6, you gain experience. And I thought about why we didn't in that moment, and obviously we forgot to, but I thought about it from the point of narrative why we didn't, and the reality is, experience in Dungeon World is a way of marking that you've learned from big mistakes and things that matter significantly when you fail, right? And that 6 isn't any of those, or that failure you rolled during the previous session wasn't any of those. It was a, you know, okay, you goofed, but, you know, the stakes are small. The consequences are minimal, effectively, for now. So I had a note, and I don't think we need to answer it in this moment, but I think we'll explore this, you know, in terms of the journey of when do we unlock things, of when do we actually start gaining XP or consequence tokens or whatever we end up calling these things.
And what counts as,
right,
you know, significant enough to learn from. And maybe something that seems very lighthearted is actually a pivotal moment. Maybe what we do is we start playing around with these consequence tokens by saying, if we roll a 6, the player can decide whether this is a consequential moment or a goof. And a consequential moment, you know, gets them an experience, but also throws a consequence token into the pool.
We may end up leading toward Heart of Ashes, because then you can decide what numbers lead to failure and success and what lead to consequence. It'll depend on how much we want to be the ones deciding that versus the dice.
Yeah, initially the consequence idea was supposed to be a way of resolving scenes that were starting to...
Oh, there are mechanics, like magic can do that in the system. I don't want to bog too deeply into that because I'd like to make note of the thought. And then as we're doing this test, we'll see, we'll make a decision point somewhere on this, because effectively we have a narrative that we're testing through different engines. And maybe,
yeah,
I think as you and I had said, perhaps clodging some of that together through, you know.
Or maybe we just start ending scenes fiasco style and asking, did we get what we wanted or not?
Oh my goodness. Let's have no rules.
I mean, look, I like it was kind of on the spot, was trying to come up with a mechanic. That's the thought I had, is that you can... No,
I'm not critiquing that. I think it's the thing we definitely defined. To your point, it demarcates both for the audience and also for the rest of the group when something matters to the character.
It's sort of like the clocks in Dungeon World. It's like a larger version of the... Of what Dungeon World already lets you do on a six, which is, you know, play a hard move. This is like this is.
Well, I think to your point, because this is collaborative running, it's not like we're tag teaming who's in charge of the scene per se. So there's not necessarily a given authority on the hard move in those moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then the question becomes, how do we adjudicate that? Well, does this moment earn? Is this a golden opportunity? Does this earn a hard consequence?
Do we have a fun, hard consequence to put in, or would we like to delay it?
Right. So that's where I think it's best for us to dive in, because character creation this time has occurred on the fly. Literally, the only things we asked for going in were a name, look, and your weapon of choice.
Okay.
What are those for you? And we'll assign your stats as we feel they're relevant.
I'm going to go with Boeth. Bolemaeus is his long name, and he probably just goes by Bo, because I don't want to make everyone keep saying Boeth. Bolemaeus is the one he doesn't like to go by, because it sounds silly. Mm-hmm. Boeth, I don't even know where that came from. Well, I mean, I know where it came from in real life, but I don't know where it came from. So I think it's probably just going to be Bo and Bolemaeus. Bo, somewhat unkempt, weapon of choice. The one thing I was certain that I think I'm certain of is that he has a bunch of like either chalk or paint, probably both, because he's always...
You're a pictomancer.
Well, I wasn't aiming for anything in particular yet, though this did come from looking at the Ashes game and the person True. Who had chalk that they could draw doors with. And I started thinking, okay, well, what about someone who, like, I started thinking of if we were going with that system, the magic power would be to draw personalities into inanimate objects and change the way they function in small ways.
Another possibility is that since we've established magic is liminal, perhaps when we go to the place where it isn't, we switch systems.
Yeah, quite possible.
Yeah.
But really, that all that did was get me thinking, and it's paint and his weapon of choice is drawing.
Okay, that's fine. So drawing implements, paintbrushes, tools, whatever. If Ani has a frying pan. So
he probably has a couple of different ones, but he's right. Always got something.
I'm going to stab you with an eye in the pencil joker style.
Take away everything he's got and he'll finger paint with mud.
That might be important soon. So, okay, I think we did bonds too, right, Ani? Okay, so one bond for Ceci, who, why don't you describe her briefly, and then we'll do the same for Finn, and then you can figure out your bonds for them.
Ceci, she is 16 years old. She's lanky and tall. Eyes are a mix of brown and green. She wears a really high ponytail, and she wears an apron over her clothes. And her weapon is a rolling pin. And she is the older sister of Alfie.
Whose fault everything is right now.
Hmm.
Okay. Finn is the kid who lives on the house on the exterior or the outside part of the village, beyond the fence, with his dad, who, was it pumpkins or squash that they were growing? I forget exactly.
Cabbages?
Yeah. There were definitely cabbages too, because we couldn't let that go. White hair, blue eyes, pale, barefoot, stick. That's all I had for descriptions. Ceci, your age was what? I put 15 for Finn.
I'm 16. I have 14 for Finn, so did you change it?
He had a birthday since the last time.
Yeah, literally during the episode. No, I think I had it 15 and then we chose 14 in game, so I'll edit it now. Okay, and...
I had actually chosen 15. And if I need to round out the appearance with the unkempt, I'm thinking especially unkempt hair. And I don't know. I sort of feel like he's got the cloth wraps on a lot of his clothes. Sometimes because he's actually just patching up clothing. And sometimes because he's got to have stuff on hand for the next time he needs to patch up clothing. He's probably very hard on clothing.
You are the village ragamuffin.
Rage muffin.
I'm like, are you homeless?
I wasn't
planning on it, but it's kind of sounding that way.
Oh my God. You're the kid who lives in the woods.
I am. Yeah, I probably live in a cave somewhere.
You know, that is fitting for these narratives. There's always there's always the one friend you have who's just off in their own, you know, like treehouse in the woods with pet squirrels or whatever.
Yeah, the other idea for thing he always had was like talks to animals or stuff like that. I decided against it, but
actually, Alfie had that. So, you know, you chose Will. Okay, let's do your bonds and then we'll roll into media res. They have a good way to do this, I think.
What do we have for bonds so far?
Okay, yeah, sure. My Finn's bond with Ceci is that she knows the best ways out of the village and that Alfie keeps following anyway. What were your bonds?
So with Finn, let's see, how did I write these down? I don't know you exist. With Alfie, feels protective of Alfie. And then the opposite was Alfie's bond with Ceci was he's shy and intimidated. And Alfie's bond with Finn was Chucky to Finn's Tommy, Bart to Milhouse, is what I wrote down.
Nice. You did have Milhouse vibes. You beat him up and stole his magic box.
No, not homeless. Okay. Not homeless. Okay. Probably a trapper or trader. And so I spend, that's not what I am. That would be what my parents are. So they spend a lot of time not around and probably not, probably spends a lot of time living at like one of the old camps.
Sure. You've got a tent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wasn't intending to be carting a tent around, but yeah.
You got to get the save point in the game somehow, man. It's either that or a big floating exclamation point that turns out to be some part of a giant flighting citadel with AI and, you know, Cabal running it.
The thing is, if you have a giant exclamation point, people are going to think you're trying to give him a quest.
Right, unless the quest is the save point that's a reveal halfway through the game after the end of Disc 1 and Disc 2 and you find the factory for them.
That was so weird.
Gears. Yeah. Oh my God, we need to get into that game one day.
That is one of two games I can think of where it turns out there's a really deep game like metaphysical connection between like the game story and the game mechanic of saving.
It was a real kind of Yoko Taro move, near genre, or a couple times with Kojima, mostly that one time with the controller. But okay, so what are you thinking for bonds with Ceci and Finn? Don't overthink it. Just go.
I'm not sure yet. I have.
You not have any? We could do that.
We could do that. I've given like.
Could be new to town.
I don't think I'm new to town, but I think I spent like I disappear for periods of time because of the lifestyle. So
let's do it then from reasons you come into town, because that would be when you interact with us for the most part.
Probably come into town for supplies.
Ceci's a baker.
Yeah, that would do it.
You trade or something?
Yeah, probably the Ceci's the best baker, or at least the best bargain.
Ouch! She's the cheapest baker.
No, not necessarily cheapest, but definitely like I was thinking more along the lines of you get the fullest for the amount of money that you spend. Like the bread lasts.
Magic bread.
Maybe. I don't know. I wasn't trying. Yeah.
Ceci's bread is the best.
Yeah, there we go.
The best bread.
And Finn, who's on the outskirts of town and probably wanders into the woods more than the others.
One of the few people really willing to step outside the village.
Okay. Let's do that. So Let me know when you're ready, and I'll throw you into a scene, because I think the best way to do this is to start with Beauf and his point of view, where he's at in the day when things just, you know, enter in.
Could we do our bonds with Beauf?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, yeah, go ahead quickly. Thank you for reminding.
I think I'm flattered that Beauf once said my bread was the best in the village.
You're going to hate me when I say this, but Finn's bond with Beauf is that Beauf has a tent.
Works for me.
It's not that he's a dense kid. He just has, you know, various particular ways of healing and dealing with people. Instrumental, you could say. What?
All right, you're going to throw me in the deep end. Let's see. I've got to try to figure out what kind of character Beauf is. I have two thoughts.
Okay, let's tell us those. Remember, well, since we've had a chance to assign two skills each, I think, right, Ani?
I had three.
Three, okay. I think we've on average assigned two or three. If you want to assign a couple stats, we're doing plus one, two, or three. Before we begin, just to be on par, we can do that so you can, you know, get yourself some defining points. It's, you know, strength, dex, on, and wisdom.
Oh, your standard strength, dex. Let's give a plus one to, I'm going to go with wisdom. You see, because he's an inquisitive type, and trying to figure things out is his deal. And I'm thinking, I was trying to figure out whether it'd be wisdom or intelligence, but I think he's a little less book learning and a little more just wanting to know.
Okay.
Wisdom is one of the plus ones. It was two plus ones, a plus two.
It's plus two, two plus ones, two zeros, and a minus one.
Okay. Wisdom is one of the plus ones.
Certain realities is wisdom, so that makes sense.
And I'm thinking...
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking a dex. I'm thinking because he has a tendency to be a bit retaliatory, got a little bit of a rebellious streak, that he's going to have to be getting out of the way a lot.
This is really funny. You have the exact same stats I assigned. I'm curious to see how the characters will differentiate as we play.
Is it the same reasons?
No.
Okay, then.
Ben is a canny little monster.
Yep. As always, all of your characters.
Yeah, mine might like, yeah. Beauf is less about being a monster and more about getting himself into trouble and getting out again.
I mean, I think that's where those two connect.
Yeah.
The objectives might be different, but the function of their actions leads the same way. Okay, so why don't you start describing Beauf's usual day as he walks into the village and what he's about. Keep in mind, it's time for the harvest. The mayor's been getting a whole bunch of stuff together for a huge party down at his house, which, you know, not everyone's invited to because we're not all great people. And here's the steam, I suppose, or at least not all important. So there's a lot of food. There's a lot of bustle in the marketplace. That's probably where most people are, I think, as we determined. The outskirts of the village are largely empty. What's your usual kind of trajectory through the village, and where do you think you're at in the moment?
I'm thinking I am very conspicuously avoiding like a certain area of town because earlier in the day, well, someone stiffed me on or cheated me on, I don't know, some supplies I was getting. And so I kind of vandalized their house. I mean, I made it look better.
Oh, goodness. How much awful.
More truthful, at the very least.
Okay, there you go. Would you be avoiding the marketplace, fair to say? Or would you be...
I'm avoiding that side of the marketplace.
Okay, so what were you buying?
Probably leather goods. Probably was trying to get a new backpack and or something like that. And the one I got ended up being a bit like rat-eaten and badly repaired.
Honey, what section do you say we were in? I think we ran through produce and a couple other things.
I think so. I think we first ran through where they were unloading barrels of drinks. And after that, we ran through produce and then you disappeared into the sky.
Okay. So if you're dodging around probably the tannery end of it, let's say that's one side of it, maybe toward the entrance to the village on that end, because it probably stinks a bit.
Yeah. Then again, I probably do too.
Right, so it's most likely your usual entrance or used to be. So how did you get in this time and where are you right now?
Where am I right now? So I'm avoiding that end. You're on the other end, the grocer's end. What would be in between?
If you want, you're at I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, are we placing you in the moment? Because I'd love to just throw you into a beat you can act on.
Throw me into a beat.
Okay. So here we go. You slipped around the tannery this time because you have a curious relationship with the person who sold you goods last time and would rather them not associate with you.
Yeah, Grug is Mr. Grug hasn't settled down yet.
Right. He's still displeased about whoever did something to his house. It totally wasn't you.
He has no proof.
Doesn't stop him. He probably will loudly tell it to anybody else. In fact, he might be trying to poison the wall against anyone else who will sell to you. So like you're giving a wide berth. And let's say north or south, which direction are you going to circumvent that part of the town, of the market?
North.
Okay. So toward the mayor's house, which is probably giving you a chance to maybe like peer through the fence and, you know, see everything they're unloading. It's going to be a huge feast. All the good stuff. The stuff that isn't going to the market, obviously, because he's bought it out already.
Mm-hmm.
Tables, checkered cloth, the whole nine yards, right? Don't know who he's inviting, but it's a big deal.
So much gingham.
It was a discount, like two villages over. That's a really good trade. So you hear some kind of clamor going on down at the market, but it could just be the usual thing of people arguing about prices. Ani, what was pulling the carts? Was it donkeys or horses?
Donkeys.
Okay. Then you hear donkeys braying, and usually they're not that loud. This is the kind of noise a distressed animal would make, as in its usual peaceful day has been screwed up royally.
Mm.
You know? And then you hear, barrels toppling over, apples rolling, people shouting. And curious, are you on the roadway? Or are you traversing, say, through, like, you know, rooftops, buildings, awnings? Do you walk like a standard person, or do you like to sneak in?
I normally walk like a standard person, but I am well accustomed to taking the rooftops when I need to.
Are you on a rooftop right now?
I think when I started hearing the commotion, I climbed up to one so I could get a better view.
It takes you a little bit, but as you jump over, you know, kind of they're all 2 and 3 story buildings for the most part by the market, because it's in some cases established stalls and maybe where some of the merchants live if they're not elsewhere in the village, right? And you see Tessie being initially accosted by somebody who, I don't know, do you remember his name, Ani?
Davey.
Davey, right. Clearly she was trying to get somebody's attention to help her things, and Davey, who is hugely into her, and, you know, it's your knowledge, not a mutual thing, thinks this is his opportunity to shine, and goes on a whole thing about how awesome he is and how much he can be of help to her. And you do you want to take it from her? Because I remember you did something to interrupt him, right? Didn't you just, like, grab him and say, you know, help, just great, help me, or something like that?
Yeah, I just pull him along, and then Finn finds Charlie and pulls Charlie along. Right.
So you can probably see, like, the detritus of a chase that ensued throughout the produce part of the market. Things tipped over, people cleaning up, and a lot of people looking into the sky, which, you know, is unusual.
I mean, I'm gonna follow their gaze, you know.
You can't see it at first, but then you hear scrabbling nearby you and through one of the awnings, and Finn waves. Hi, Bo.
Hello.
And then he keeps going up past you and keeps going up.
Is he within reach?
I'd say there's a moment. Do you want to think? Do you want, like, what's your choice? Are you acting or thinking?
I'm acting. Like, this is this is too good. I've got to see where the, you know, I'm going to pull him closer, see what, get a better look.
Okay, so first trick is you're going to try getting a hold of him. So strength or dex? Trying to hold him down or just trying to grab quickly?
Grab quickly.
Sounds like dex.
I think there's so much more potential fun in that.
You know, we don't actually know how any of this stuff works, so we might be finding out.
All right.
So 2d6 plus dex. Okay, we got a 9. So this is one of those classic elements of Dungeon World where on a 7 to 9, you stumble, hesitate, or flinch. The GM will offer a worst choice, hard bargain, or ugly choice. So the way we've been doing this is whoever's not primary in the scene gets to play the role of GM for the moment.
Okay.
So, yes, that would be me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he choosing a worse outcome, a hard bargain, or an ugly choice? And what is it?
Yeah. What do you choose?
Well, you can say what, or you can ask him to and then decide what it is, your preference.
You can decide which one you want. I will tell you what it is.
So what were the three again? A hard bargain, a worse outcome.
So it's worse outcome, hard bargain, or ugly choice.
Hard bargain, because I'm mostly doing this for curiosity. I'm not yet aware that there's, like, a real problem here. So this is just kind of cool. I mean, it's weird, but, like,
but it's neat.
I'm not worried for Finn's safety yet.
Right. It's most, he's drifting maybe like a foot or so above you. And you know.
For a hard bargain, you can reach him, but you will have to leave something behind.
I don't have a lot to leave behind. I get.
You have a backpack.
Oh, you know what it is? What I leave behind?
Go ahead.
The ground.
I was about to say, doesn't have to be a material thing.
Mm-hmm. There you go. You start floating.
Oh, okay. Does this start moving Finn down, or is he still moving up at the same rate?
You know, okay. In the last game, he was carrying a box. Not that you would have known this, but we're doing this to figure out an answer to your question. He let go of everything in the box to hold on to the thing. We don't know what's inside. That was Andrew's boss. Some glowing green object, I think, was all he gave a description to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And holding on to that made Finn fly upward.
And he's still holding on to it?
Yes, obviously. I let go of the box to hold on to that.
Okay.
And I think, you know what? I think it's a discerned reality, right?
Sure.
Because you don't know any better than I do, so we're going to get make an estimated guess on this. Closely study a situation, roll plus whiz.
Well, I haven't assigned a stat, so it's discern realities is going to just be at a zero.
It's whiz. You assigned a plus one.
I thought, you're right. I thought, spout you're lore, right. Isn't. Discern realities is the plus one.
If you'd rather spout lore be your thing, then you can.
No, no, I want to discern realities. I just had got them confused in my head for a moment.
No worries. So 2d6 plus one, see what you get.
Eight.
Okay.
So if I remember correctly with that one.
One question.
You can ask one question, yeah.
I'm going to go for the fun one. What here is not what it appears to be?
Money?
Something Finn is glowing strangely in his hand, and he doesn't seem to notice that it's starting to creep around the back of his, like, palm.
Ah, dude, what is that?
Oh.
The thing on the back of your hand.
Well, that's, when you say creep, does it look like crystal growth, vines, you know, what's the visual here?
It looks like green vines.
I mean, Alfie told me to hold on to it, so, you know, I did, and...
Oh, and count the leaves. It might be poison ivy.
Okay, sure. How many leaves are there?
There are no leaves. It's just vines. Like,
oh, okay. Poison ivy. You're probably okay, then, unless it's got thorns.
Importantly, are we still going up, or did him holding on to me keep me level?
That's what I asked earlier.
Yeah, you're still going up, but it's slowed down significantly.
Interesting. So maybe you can help me out here. I was trying to figure out a way to, like, you know, grab onto things, but I figure with three arms? Yeah, two and a half arms. Math is not my thing. We can grab onto something and maybe, you know, propel. Because what I'd really like to do is, he points over to the mayor's house, you know.
I like the way you think.
I think Ceci's been following us, right? She can read body language probably well enough to know what just went through those minds.
Probably.
What are you doing while we're trying to get there?
She's trying to, like, run towards you guys and grab a hold of... Well, granted, like, Bo's only, like, half a foot off the ground at the moment. Because
that is probably true.
You're very slowly floating up, but it's not super quickly.
All right, so you're trying to get people up the roof of that building to grab both of them.
Basically.
Okay. Let's see here. Is it imminent threat or calamity? When you stand in defense, it's not a defend on this, I don't think. Weirdly, it feels like you're trying to get a crowd to aid you.
I think so. That would make sense.
You can have bonds with anything in this game, so... And you got a bond with the community, probably, being the baker that feeds them.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
So in this case, sure. Roll 2d6 plus your bond with them. And depending on how well they do, they might help you or get in your way.
Oh, would we say I have one bond with the community?
It sounds like it. And your bread isn't cocaine level yet.
I rolled like I always roll.
Did you roll a 4?
I rolled a 5.
So this is where things are going to get interesting, because... On a 7 to 9, you expose yourself to danger, retribution, or cost. Anything less than that is a failure, period.
I think they're bogging down Ceci and being like, where's the bread? Where's your mom? Where, like, fully in the party mood, they need to set it up.
So weirdly, they seem unconcerned with this, or like they've forgotten about it entirely.
Yeah.
I think so.
That's strange.
So my question then, and I guess I'm not there to ask it, but I guess since I'm not there to ask it, I won't say it.
Well, I'm going to give you an opportunity because there is an NPC you can give voice to if you want here. Davey, right?
There's Charlie.
There's Charlie, Charlie, there's Davey. They also seem to have forgotten what just happened, or are they still trying to scramble up to grab Finn and Bo?
I don't know what Charlie was doing. I think Charlie just sort of
he was running
left.
Interference. Oh, no, Charlie ran with the box.
Yeah, he ran with the box in a different direction.
Okay, so it's just Davey. Does Davey notice or is he forgotten?
I think he stayed behind with Sussy.
Okay.
And is now a part of the mob.
Davey was older than you, right?
Around the same age, maybe 17.
Okay. I'm going to throw this at her because we're doing collaborative GMing here. I think you have an opportunity for either a discern reality or a spout lore about magic and why people do and don't notice it.
Mm.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do a discern reality.
Okay, so that's plus whiz. Because this is a moment of, wait a minute, why, not just why aren't they listening to me, but literally everything that just happened seems to be completely out of their minds.
I rolled a 3.
Glorious.
All right.
Okay.
I'm rolling like I always roll. It's fine.
It's just going to make stuff happen. Mm. Go ahead.
Okay. The way I would think that this would happen, actually, a 3 doesn't always mean you don't get a question. It means there's a hard move.
Right.
So I would adjudicate it like this. You still get to ask one question off of the list, but I have the hard move.
Which you can use now or later.
Oh, it'll be now, but because you're going to be stuck trying to hold two ideas in your head at the same time.
Yeah.
So
after all, you are right at that age threshold.
There you go.
It's true.
So what question?
I would ask.
I'm pulling a lock and key here. Turn 18 and forget magic exists entirely. What's that?
Who's
explain?
Really in control here?
There you go.
All right. I think that what you see is that you see that there is one person who hasn't lost all of this. And looking from the other side, the mayor's residence is, what do you say, mayor's son or mayor's wife?
I had notes for a potential guard or somebody who'd be standing guard over the proceedings, make sure we don't screw them up.
I'm thinking this is someone in the family or someone high up in the government.
Okay. I forget their name here, but it was when I run games, I'm more organized than when I play them.
Deputy Mayor.
Here we go. So I was writing notes on mock combat, and for whatever reason, I wrote down an ogre, quote unquote, named Butternut, who's just a guard at the manse. What he wants to do is squash them. I think I wasn't exactly being serious here, but I was trying to be in spirit of, the goofiness. But yeah, I feel like if it's not a chief guard, then it's the one of the mayor's sons or the like who thinks it is their job to make sure things go right in this moment. And we're going.
I think that's exactly it. It's like it's some. Yes, that is exactly the right mentality for him. So it's one of the mayor's kids who is watching.
Someone who's going to be as childish as us if we push them.
But as soon as you see them and they see you, like this idea enters your head about how, is it late in the day or early in the day?
It's early in the day, okay. Like mid-morning.
About how there's so much to do and get accomplished before lunch, and like you're gonna miss like you've got to so many things you've got to get before you have to leave the market, and that is just this really pressing idea in your head. Actually, it's not one you have to respond to, but it's a oddly prominent idea in your head.
I defy danger.
The consequence is that you have this pressing idea in your head. But my standard with that kind of thing is that how you respond to that is your choice. Defy danger is a good one, but you are ultimately the arbiter of your character.
So here's where I'm going to throw in a question of whether or not we're experiencing a part of the mechanics here. We were talking earlier about when actions have consequence and when you gain experience in the system, when you fail a roll. That technically you do. But as we've said, that shouldn't really happen until there's a moment that matters or has real impact or import to the narrative or the character.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, was making notes, when our actions have consequence, it should, as with the first mock combat, be some moment that matters, something pivotal, such as when we must leave and never return again, end descriptions or narrative, and then mark one experience. In other words, when that first experience you gain, point you gain, it changes the nature of how everything is. Is this the moment that Sassy gains a point of experience?
I think it is. I think it is. And she's going to defy danger through quick
that's scary.
Thinking. Yes. She's going to use quick thinking.
Okay. Intelligence. So plus int.
Yeah, I don't have int yet. So I'm going to put a plus one to int.
You two's in what, Charisma?
You defy danger with anything.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm doing the... with quick thinking.
Oh, okay. Because quick thinking,
she, because she's going to take the rolling pin that she still has and she smacks her leg with it to create a sense of pain that is outside the current state and try to get this weird feeling out of her brain.
Okay. You could do defend on that too if you're defending yourself versus the invasive idea, but let's roll for it and see what happens. And hope it's over a six.
Please let me not roll double ones.
Did you just roll double ones?
She did.
Wow. Okay.
I haven't rolled yet for this one. That was last time.
Okay, I was about to say.
I rolled a 10.
Woo!
Oh, you are so lucky. Blessed child. Okay, yeah. On a 10, you do what you set out to do and the threat doesn't come to bear. So hard, painful. It's a good solid rolling pin. You slapped Finn earlier, so, you know, you've got a good swing.
Yep.
The rolling pin hurts. It's going to leave an ugly bruise, but whatever flitted through your head, it wasn't you, it wasn't yours, and it's gone, thankfully.
In fact, you see it like as soon as it's out of your head, you see it, like, dart away into the shadows, whatever it was, like a small fleeing animal.
Oh, that's terrible. I'm glad you took that. Oh. We just put the invasive ideas threat into this game, didn't we?
We sure did.
So you have your chance. You were free of the terrifying thought. You can definitely pursue the others. Are you going to head to where you think they're going, or are you going to try to get them on the roof?
I think I'm not going to the roof. I'm not that dexterous. And she's just running down the street towards the mayor's house, just dodging people the best she can.
So I think the big question you and I have to answer, Bo, or Dave, how we manage to maneuver with this. Because we know where we want to go. The question is, can we get there?
Do we have any actual ability of steer? Well, yeah, I'm only a foot off the... Am I a foot off the ground or a foot off the roof?
You're a foot off the roof, I think.
Okay, good. Okay, that makes more sense.
So initially when it was just Finn, he was kind of parkouring and then skidding along things. But by himself, it was just pulling him upwards. At the very end of the first session, it was Ben going straight up and Sassy yelling, Finn! Recar named Desire style. I did actually find from some of the old stuff, you know, back when we used to run, there are a couple moves we could use if we figure out what we're doing. But I feel like we don't get the move itself until we have a better idea of what we're trying to do with the thing, the magic itself. Does that make sense?
Hmm. I kind of like, well, I'll tell you what I think Bo would do.
Okay.
Is I think he'd try to wave Finn's arm around and see if that did anything.
To steer him?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay. Is this an 8?
Yeah. I mean, that is the thing I keep forgetting with Dungeon World is that you're really supposed to describe what you try. And then when it starts sounding like a move, then you deal with it.
Okay, so yeah, you're going to try steering Finn because you've maneuvered other things of unusual shape into directions you'd like to go. Well, we don't want to, you know, it sounds like defy danger because you're not trying to protect anything or interfere and you're taking initiative as opposed to helping directly. Well, actually, let me ask you, are you trying to steer Finn to help him figure out how to use this or are you trying to just maneuver the flying person?
It's closer to the first one. I don't know that Bo's actually thought it out so much, but it's more along the lines of he hasn't stopped to consider that Finn wouldn't be interested in figuring out how to steer this.
Right. So in other words, you're aiding and you'll hopefully help. And if not, you know, you'll be there for the ride anyway.
Mm-hmm.
2d6 plus 1.
Sounds good.
Mm.
Are you rolling or am I? Am I aiding?
When you aid, you roll and then add that result to...
Oh, right. It's been a while.
It has. 5 years, if not more.
All right, 2d6 plus one. And the one is the bond. A 9.
Okay, then. On a 7 to 9, you expose yourself to danger, retribution, or cost, but you do help.
I thought the way that often worked, and I think in this particular case it makes perfect sense for, is that I'm well and truly involved in whatever the consequence of your role is.
Okay. You know what? I think this is a character-defining moment, because the question is, does Finn take a moment to like figure things out, discern realities-wise, or does he just do it? And I feel like Finn, knowing where he wants to go, just does it. So, powering through. Let's go strength. I think Finn's got a plus two in strength.
I haven't decided what my plus two is. I might actually make Dex my plus two now that I'm thinking about it, and leave one of the plus ones for...
We don't have to be permanent about these. Likely change, and you gain more as you level anyway. Or right. Gain more in Heart of Ashes through tags we associate. Don't know. So it just feels like a plus two to this right now. 2d6 plus three because you're eating. And hopefully... That's enough. I have to put in roll. An 8. Okay, then. This is a defy danger on an 8. Powering through. I think Finn's idea is he sees you, you know, taking a hand at the rudder and figures, hey, the magic's moving. The question is, can we angle ourselves in a trajectory toward where we want to go, which is all the fancy tables and food? And it's powering through. So, Ani, are you going to make me choose those three, or are you going to give me one and then we'll figure out what it is? A hard bargain,
one.
An ugly choice, or a worse outcome?
Worse outcome.
Okay, so it has to be a worse outcome.
And let's aim this for a cliffhanger.
So your goal is to get towards the mayor's house or to sabotage the party? Like, what's your goal here?
Sabotage is incidental. We're getting to the mayor's house to get where all the good food and interesting stuff is. Basically, we are inviting ourselves into the goings-on as they're being prepared for, because I don't think the party's on yet.
Yeah, we're just trying to get, you know, we're trying to get there early, get good seats.
Exactly.
Yeah, of course. So as you move towards the mayor's house, slowly floating away in that direction, there is a gust of wind that picks up.
Is it in the direction of the house or away from?
That's the cliffhanger.
Okay, so powering through... Finn's not sure how, and I think this is something we're going to have to explore in the next session, because there's no real reason this should work. He's got a strange, well, actually, you know, here we go. This should not, you know, you've got a magical glowing rock that makes you fly. You should not be able to physically maneuver your way into flying in a given direction or compelling something to move you, right? Those shouldn't be doable things. But you're describing a strong wind moving us forward. And I think we have to, based on the number of hard moves that have occurred this time and the, you know, the soft moves we've been laying out, whatever is growing on Finn continues. And you don't know, I don't think any of us know if that's why he's able to do it, if it's even related or if it's just, you know, continued use of this thing. There's no, we're not going to know in this moment. Just Bo, all you see as that gust of wind pulls us forward, propels us forward, I should say, is the vines continuing to move up his arm to his shoulder and the stone glowing all the brighter. But we are flying, man, right toward the best seats in the house.
Interesting.
This is all Andrew's fault.
Indeed.
It is.
Now, some thoughts for next time, then. Bo's supposed to share in whatever the trouble is.
Correct. The consequences, the cost, the trouble.
Now, that could just be, we could just hold on to that for later, and I could, you know, but...
If I were a GM, I'd say something, but, you know, we're doing collaborative, so it's a question of, do you want that to be defined for Bo now and say something, or do you want to explore it?
I'll explore it later. It doesn't seem fitting, like, that particular consequence doesn't seem fitting to, like, you know, actually, no. It's a series of vines, right?
Yeah.
All right. And Bo was just trying to shake around that arm to see if he could steer.
Oh, no. You're holding that shoulder, aren't you?
I was holding that shoulder. I just got stabbed by thorns. And so I lost grip, and now I'm holding on to Finn's leg.
As he's powering through, you're just big gust of wind, whatever, this magic compelling you both, whatever that is, you're being pulled down, best seats in the house, and your grip is...
So now I'm in a much more precarious position.
Right, tenuous at best.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
And because it's a sudden thing, it's going to take our attention away from the arm.
Absolutely. So now we have two or three strange magical things occurring, whatever that invasive idea was to Sassy's head, whatever this glowing object is, and then whatever compels the wind.
The wind actually could be happenstance. I aimed for the small creature because I wanted the idea that it wasn't necessarily a magical object. It might just be a type of creature.
This was short-lived, but the writers of The Good Wife did a political satire with, the actor who played Monk in the detective series, Tony Shalhoub, as a political pundit who gets his brain eaten by space ants. And the whole thing is this meteorite lands and the ants crawl out and eat people's brains and take over politics. Do dark forms of comedy. And Tony Shalhoub becomes one of the hosts to one of the hive queens and starts astroturfing the hell out of their election system to encourage greater ant population. There was no way that thing wasn't going to spiral dangerously out of control. But the little invasive idea made me think of space ants that, make you direct your thoughts in bad ways. Honey, you've been heading toward the mayor's house, right?
Yeah, her eyes locked with the son of the mayor, and she's running straight towards him, the rolling pin raised.
So you're going to run interception on whatever this is?
Yes.
Okay, I think
something weird's going on. I'm going to thump it.
Next section is mock combat. I think we're getting a food fight. It's a good thing you have one arm free. That way you can grab like the turkey leg or, a banana or a cabbage. Volley.
Let's make this a party. Nobody will forget.
Just because in keeping with the ideas laid down in the game, my thinking for this creature is that it's a creature that has been putting ideas into people's heads. It is not the idea necessarily itself, because that would imply there's one in everybody's head, and that's a bit too big for the type of magic we're talking about.
A little early in the game for brainworm cults.
Right, exactly.
No tadpoles.
Well, we'll see what the rest of it is. I don't want to define it. This has got to be open to everyone.
We're not going to Earthbound's Happy Happy Village.
Right. Blue.
That game.
It is not as powerful as the Manny Manny statue.
Oh, my goodness.
This has been another Otter Worlds, and I will refrain from making any comparisons about how odd it is. Until next time, I have been Rem Nessus, a.k.a. David Herman of the Brothers Herman.
I am Jared Zervas, Here Be Tigers, your storytelling guide.
And I'm still on your Blue Facili online, and I'm just hanging out with these guys.
Nothing at all in this game is her fault, we promise.
Now, join us next time for Pirates of the Food Fight.
A good story can excite us, yes. But the best ones, fiction or not, compel, inspire, or drive us toward the hope that we need for a better life. Remember, you don't need to know everything right now, but you do need to write. So make sure to like, review, and subscribe to us at Here Be Tigers. And until next time, take life by the tail. Aren't we going Pirates of Dark Water or something a little fluffier?
Sky Pirates of the Food Fight.
Oh my god. Wait, does this mean we get an airship? No, I am the airship.
You are the airship.
If that thing grows over entirely, you might be right.
Oh no. We're going like 60s sitcom, turn into a car stuff.